Welcome to the Dead Pixel Society podcast, the photo imaging industry's leading news source. Here's your host, Gary Peugeot.
The Dead Pixel Society podcast is brought to you by Media Clip, Advertech Printing, and IP Labs.
Hello again and welcome to the Dead Pixel Society podcast. I'm your host, Gary Peugeot, and today we're joined by Matthew Wolf, who's the Director of Cybersecurity Operations with Impero, and he's coming to us from Texas today. Hi, Matthew. How are you today?
Great, and I'm happy to be here. How are you doing today?
Doing good, doing good. Now, cybersecurity is something that every business now has to deal with. That it's unavoidable. There's death, taxes, and cybersecurity, it seems like, for most of the people, especially people in the market who are in serving, you know, confidential pictures such as school photographers, or, you know, you're doing wedding photography and you want to maintain the cybersecurity thing. What is the kind of the definition of cybersecurity that your company uses? What do you consider your marketplace?
For sure. So I guess my definition of cybersecurity may be different from others in our organization.
Exactly. That's why I'm asking, right?
Yep, exactly. So for my definition is, if it has any sort of electronic mechanisms within it where ones and zeros may pass through it, even through the power outlet, because there's such a thing as Ethernet over power, then that device has the capability of being exploited. And so cybersecurity, to me, is where you defend not only in the physical environment, but also in the internet networking environment as well.
And what types of information? Now, let's say, for example, you know, let's say you're running a retail store and you're selling cameras and prints and things like that. What type of information is a person looking to exploit your network looking for? What are they trying? What is their objective?
For sure. So one of the most lucrative exploits that you can do is get credit card information or get different mailing addresses and different PII that like you could be storing on one of your servers. But most of the time, any information that's going to be exploited, the best bang for the threat adversary is going to be from the deep web. So, you know, you got the company's website, it's like the regular internet. Well, then in your Dropbox or Google Drive or your server, if you have a server, that's the deep web. That's where majority of the internet resides. And that's actually where majority of the exploits target. And that's where most of the threat actors try to get into.
Okay, so if someone has a Dropbox, which many of my listeners do because they use that to transfer pictures back and forth, right? And even though you may have bought the Dropbox extra plan or whatever, you still are vulnerable with a platform like that. Not Dropbox specifically, but sort of like these pass-through environments like OneDrive, Dropbox, et cetera.
You can be, absolutely. There's a funny saying where technology can be a great servant, but a terrible master.
Okay.
And that's where, you know, a photographer could have all these thousands of photos in a Dropbox and have it in one folder, but then they share it and say, allow this whole folder to be accessible to anyone on the internet. Well, just one time that link just has to be shared, and then it's shared again and shared again. Now the whole world has access to that entire photographer's library of photos. So it's really a matter of exploiting controls that were not used to be exploited, but exploiting those normal controls to do something malicious with.
So what are the typical things your company sees that are like mistakes typical business owners make when they have to share data, when they have to allow access? For example, you know, you have to allow a customer to have access to a folder with the pictures that they bought from you, for example.
I would have to say co-review. So just because I want to share something with some third party or a contractor or even someone else internally, a lot of times when it gets into data loss prevention, someone is not there to review what I share. Just because I want to review everyone in the organization's social security numbers doesn't mean I should.
Right.
So, and that's majority of the time, that's when an issue like this happens, is that there's not a check and balance. There's not fault tolerance for people mm-hmm. of saying, well, just because this person submits a request doesn't mean they should inherently do it.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things I think that most people aren't aware of with cybersecurity, because you're the expert and I'm not. But from what I hear is it's when human beings are involved is when most of the breaches occur. It's either, you know, sloppy password management. It's sharing stuff they shouldn't over an open network. It's not using VPNs or whatever. So the human beings are the problem.
I would say 100% of the time. So, but I would say in my research and in our team's research of how we look at how organizations are being exploited, one of the number one ways is through email. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to continue to be through email, because without the huge drive in all the organizations across the world to do cybersecurity training, to look at what a phishing email looks like, until basically the whole world is trained, mm-hmm. you're still going to have people clicking on an email. Mm-hmm. And that's where I, with, you know, let's say a photography company, the person in accounting first week on the job, they don't know what's a good email compared to a bad email. They don't know all the different sources of the good people sending emails in. So they're just clicking on every link. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, that's when the next way happens, because mm-hmm. that attacker is trying to get into the deep web.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I see that a lot of times. I mean, I as a business, I get those emails. You know, you've got an invoice from, you know, usually it's someplace like, you know, GoDaddy or Geek Squad PayPal. Or somebody. They're pretending to be somebody else. And the email is just from, you know, so-and-so.NigerianPrince.something, mm-hmm. something, right? So it's clearly a phishing expedition. But I imagine there's a lot of people who fall for that.
Yep, especially with how crafty you can get. Because I would say in roughly about 30 minutes, I can send you an email from PayPal. Now, given if you have proper control set up in your email box, it should be flagged. Mm-hmm. However, if it's not, then it's going to show from Matt Wolf at PayPal.com mm-hmm. sent you this email saying, hey, you have $150 or $3,000 or $20,000 waiting to be sent to you. Click here to verify.
Right.
And it looks like that's the name, PayPal.com. And you're like, oh, well, I have to click on this link without looking into it a little bit further.
Right.
And that's where in the cybersecurity industry, people have created tools in order to do those checks for you.
So what can they do, for example? Give me an example. Let's say someone sends me one of those links. I get a link from Matthew Wolf at PayPal.com. It says, and I may not be the one person who normally deals with those emails. And I just see it comes in and says something like, your order is ready. Click here to do something. And I click on that. So what can happen when that happens? When I'm, you know, the inexperienced or inattentive person who clicked on that, what danger have I put my company in?
Oh, every bit of danger. The moment you click on that link, you're done. I have everything. So part of my background, I actually served in the United States Army as a cybersecurity non-commissioned officer, and I was part of both the blue team and the red team at different points in time. So I have built custom payloads, like exploiting people. I have done this. Mm-hmm. I have exploited thing time and time again. And mm-hmm. basically when you click on a link, I can send you to wherever. I get every credential you've ever put in. I can do
so they can go right into the people's hard drive then, and
oh yeah,
information there. It's not just the internet stuff, it's what's on the hard drive itself of the computer.
Absolutely, because whenever you click on a link, I can make it where the website you go to does an automatic download and an automatic execute. So then basically or you think it's a file and you click on the file, then it executes, and then I own everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it happens pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, there's been several cases, you know, in the industry where this has happened, and it's, you know, ransomware, it's different things that could happen. So once you own everything, is it always a ransomware situation, or is it just I'm phishing for customer information? What is the most prevalent thing that happens there?
Would have to be ransomware, or at least that's what's discovered most of the time. Mm-hmm. But one of the more deadlier things in industries that create is a remote access Trojan. Mm-hmm. That's something to where this remote access Trojan allows an attacker to be able to have access to the computer at all times. Mm-hmm. And you don't know about it.
Right.
So the attacker is downloading all your files. This kind of goes back to that DLP, that data loss prevention. you don't know that you're sending files out to anybody and everybody. And that is one of the most undiscovered exploits out there.
Can your network be set up to detect that kind of traffic? Or is that something that's, it may be happening in such a way it's unnoticeable?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Photo retailers, energize your sales with ShareMe Chat, the proven texting platform. Using chat to text on your website keeps your customers connected and buying. See us at Pro and IPI to find out why dealers using ShareMe Chat close more sales without adding staff. Find out more at ShareMe.chat.
Most of the time, it's unnoticeable unless you buy certain things to be able to catch that or see that. And that's where in our organization, we have took every approach that we can think of to look at ourselves and be able to apply our even our own tools to ourselves of how we can defend against all these adversaries out there. Because there's something that's called the cybersecurity kill chain. This was first created, I think, like back in, 2015 or something, or 2009, I don't know.
Oh my gosh, but ancient history.
Ancient history, yes. And so basically most hackers out there, they get familiar with the cybersecurity kill chain because it systematically walks you through how to exploit something. And the first step is reconnaissance. And so that's where if you can attack the initial step first, and then you keep on moving down the chain, defend the first step first, and then move down the kill chain, you posture yourself for a better defense. And that's where catch the bad link before it even gets to your mailbox.
And how could someone do that? Is there software? I mean, obviously everyone has a spam folder. Everyone's got a junk folder and that sort of stuff. So the email platforms are trying to do some of that, but they're, according to my mailbox, they're not that successful.
Right, exactly. And that's where there are going to be different, email security gateway products or CASB cloud access security broker products that will inspect every email, inspect the source. To be a little too technical, they're going to look at the SPF, the DKIM, the DMARC. They're going to look at every one of these little small granular details in the email that's coming through, and they're going to set up their own thresholds, but then also they're going to have a holistic view across the globe of how other companies are seeing these emails.
Right. Because I imagine part of what they're trying to do is, you know, it's a spray and pray kind of situation. They're going after thousands of companies to get 3 or 4%. If they can do that, they're winning.
Oh, even 1%. I mean, it just takes one time. I mean, take the Los Angeles Unified School District. I mean, and it could be just one email or one server that was available online. And then now they're losing hundreds of thousands of critical records, $100 million lost from one server being accessible.
So let's talk about that, because that's kind of a famous example. Can you talk about that one?
For sure. Basically, the information that was released about how things got in, it's very vague for a reason. And that's because as a malicious person, you know, you want to know how you got in or they got in, that way you can recreate it. So basically there were servers that were exposed to the internet that should not have been. And then on top of it, there were certain features that were enabled that should not have been. And basically these people exploited those vulnerabilities that should not have been there to begin with, should not have been even been visible. It was almost like locking your front door, but then leaving a key dangling next to the front door with a sticky note saying, well, this is only for so-and-so whenever they get here. And it is literally that easy and that simple is what basically happened.
So what was the fallout from that? What kind of information was being obtained from that?
Oh, even driver license number, social security numbers.
Because it was the student information as well. I mean, it wasn't just the employee. It was, and that's where in the photographic industry, especially for like we were talking about earlier before the broadcast, the school photography industry, you know, this is sensitive information. This is, you know, not their own information, not even customer information, but the information about children, which can be very concerning to a lot of parents.
And it should be. And the main reason why is because social security numbers sell for a lot on the dark web. You know, I talk about like the front web, deep web, dark web. So the dark web, a student, I mean, someone under the age of 18 typically doesn't have a credit card.
Right.
And so if you get 500,000 credit or social security numbers, those social security numbers from the school district are unused. So now you can commit fraud very easily. And on top of it, with the sheer amount that you gained, if you sell them for $2 a piece, then you're a millionaire.
Right. So you don't have to deal again. You don't have to do it. You don't have to score big. You score less than 1% with that spray and pray routine, and you'll do well on this.
Exactly.
So there's a high motivation to do it. So let's flip the script then on why people are doing it. Let's talk a little bit about what people can be doing to offset this or prevent it. Now, we've talked a little bit about the human factor, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, train your people not to click on stuff, put in some systems in place. Is there anything they can do from a technology standpoint to protect, like specifically like personal records or student IDs or things like that? Or is that just considered information? There's really not much else you can do with it.
Well, they can do a whole lot of preventative measures, especially in something that's called a defense in depth strategy. Mm-hmm. And we can even dive into a specific scenario too of like, well, let's say this happened. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, let's say, would you want me to talk about, let's say, a photography company or like a school district of what they
can do? Like a school district, I think would be interesting because that's really where there's a great concern in the industry for that vulnerability.
Absolutely. So a school district, basically what they could do is if their student information system, their SIS system, is in a certain VLAN or a certain network, restrict access to everyone except for those specifically, like those people who need it. Mm-hmm. And then for the people who actually need it, you can install certain software that prevent you from launching any unknown executables, what we talked about in the email earlier. You can put on an email security gateway or a CASB to prevent any unknown emails from coming in or only accept certain emails coming in. So that way the SIS people or PIMs, you know, whoever they are, they're accessing that SIS system. Mm-hmm. Whenever they click on or they are supposed to get an email in, well, it gets blocked. Let's say it gets through. They click on a download link. Well, now they try to click run the application. Mm-hmm. But yet, you know, if they use a product, I'm going to be very partial here, but Impero's Connect product, we can stop applications from launching. But, you know, if that person tries to click on it, mm-hmm. well, they can't because Impero Connect blocked it, you know, and that's where you have to look at it from an organization perspective of what tools do I have to prevent something very bad from occurring. Mm-hmm. And you have to start with yourself first and your own organization first, and then you build on it.
What do you do, though, from a personnel standpoint? Let's say, for example, you've got people like, oh, this cybersecurity stuff is a pain. I got to keep logging in. It won't let me do what I want to do. I got to get permission if I want to access this, you know, and then people start writing their logins on post-it notes or who knows what else, you know, things people do. So, I mean, if you're the IT administrator at this company, you've got to be kind of a hard ass.
That's what it seems like. But at the same time, in my experience, the reason why most people have to be that way is because they didn't plan ahead enough.
Right.
And I say that very like from experience where I rolled out certain changes that I did not think about everything or get enough input on, and it bit me pretty hard. And that's where from that IT administrator, if you want to roll out SSO and multi-factor authentication with a physical token, if you want to roll that out in your organization, then get some champions, quote unquote, champions to trial it first. And then after they trial it, you work out all the hard angles and you get your most complicated people, like, you know who those people are. But you get them to work on it first because they're going to be your biggest critiques. But if you get them on board to be a champion and get them through, it's going to help 90% of all the other people.
So you solve the human problem with technology with human beings.
Yep, absolutely. It goes back to technology can be a great servant, but a terrible master. Yeah. Because the thing is, you could have the most expensive firewall in the world. I mean, there are some fantastic companies out there that do this. But if somebody doesn't configure it right, it's just a paperweight.
Right. So let's talk a little bit before we started, you were talking a little bit about metadata, about how that can be a potential thing to exploit. Now, Now, on one hand, photographers love the metadata, and the companies that serve photographers love the metadata because it has a whole host of important information, including copyright information, right? You know, location, who shot it, you know, what the rights are for that picture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What are the dangers from your side with metadata? Because you were talking about actually it's a good idea to strip it out.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love talking about how I know exactly where my family is by the pictures that they upload on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I don't have a Facebook myself, but that doesn't mean I don't have the access to Facebook.
Right.
And that's where I'm like, oh, hey, mom, or hey, brother, hey, sister, I know exactly where you are right now. And I send them a text and I'm just like, how do you know? I'm like, well, because you're not stripping your metadata. Mm-hmm. And however, it's going back to what you said, a lot of photographers like that metadata. Mm-hmm. So that's where you got to take that double-edged sword and use it to your benefit, and that's mm-hmm. your exploit. If you know a company does not want, like, let's say a photography company has to take pictures of classrooms and students are in there, and that school district wants a really tight security posture to say, I don't want the geolocation of every single classroom mm-hmm. to be out there.
Right.
And as a photographer, you say, okay, I will strip that very specific geolocation of that picture, and you still have all the other metadata that you gain from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you take that double-edged sword and use it to your advantage rather than to your defeat.
So what would now talk a little bit about that process, because, you know, I mean, that sounds to me like that's onerous. Is there, you know, obviously there's a script maybe that could be written or something like that, but that sounds pretty onerous to have to customize fields for, you know, clients.
Yeah, I would say there's some software out there that you can bulk edit metadata off of pictures.
Right.
It's been a few years since I've done even steganography, but even back then I was able to mass select tens of thousands of pictures and make it where I just strip out that one line item, and it was a bulk change of remove geo tagging. Mm. And or from the camera itself before the shoot, you can adjust the camera to not record that metadata. So I think it goes back to like a lot of preventative steps that you can do to make it where it's not administrative overhead, you know, overbearing,
right,
or ominous.
But what's the danger in metadata? I mean, it just place, time, location. It doesn't have social security numbers. It doesn't have that kind of stuff. What's the problem with it?
I'll tell you a really good one. I can talk about this one. So I had a friend, they went on vacation and they were posting pictures of vacation. And basically, you know, the whole family is gone. They left the house. However, they posted previous pictures of, like, you know, their family inside the house. Well, all those pictures were unsanitized.
Mm-hmm.
So now someone who scrolling through Facebook or Instagram, download those pictures, finding out the geolocation, saying, oh, they're from Texas. This is their house's geolocation and they're in Florida. Mm-hmm. Let me go to their house, break in, steal all their stuff. And basically that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, in their pictures, they did not show, you know, their Vivint home security system or ADT. There was no visible signs of any cameras or anything.
Right.
So then, therefore, it was an easy target.
Right.
And that's how pictures with the metadata led to an attacker having an easy target and stealing a lot of stuff.
And most people don't think about that because either they're ignorant of what's in metadata or they just think it's not going to happen to me, which I think is probably what these types of thieves are looking for, are the thought it's not going to happen to me, right? I mean, I probably every exploit your company's ever dealt with, the company you're the person who's afflicted calls you and says, we never thought this would happen to us.
Yep, absolutely. And I think that's where people believe that they're going to be safe inherently.
Right.
Whereas the real mindset you should have is that you're going to be exploited. It's just a matter of when.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a whole lot of companies that say that mm-hmm. I have definitely stole that from, but it's definitely a true thing. I mean, it's a matter of when. And that's where if you keep constantly changing how you're doing your defense to make it better, then it's going to continue to delay it from happening.
Right.
Because basically the only time that you're not going to be exploited is whenever you turn off the internet and delete everything you ever owned.
Which, wow. So one of the things that some of my listeners are running into is having to have cybersecurity insurance or protection of some sort in order to even bid on jobs. Now, from what I've heard, it's super expensive. It's not an inexpensive. One of them says it's going to be more than his health insurance premiums for the year. Is there anything they can do? Now, I understand your company doesn't do insurance, but is there anything they can do that could maybe process a technology, a product they could use to maybe reduce their premium even? Like say, hey, if I do these things, I'm less of a risk.
That's a great question. The best answer for that would be to ask the companies that are offering the cybersecurity insurance. Mm-hmm. They can, a company can say, what would it take to lower my premiums by 90%? Yeah. You know, they can get bold. And whenever they seek out multiple companies that can offer that cybersecurity insurance, they're going to tell them. Because basically, some companies say, well, if you show us a proof of concept that you follow NIST Incident Response Plan or ISO 27001, if you obtain that certification, we're going to reduce the premium by 50%. Mm-hmm. And so if they, you know, pursue certain certifications or they show the proof of concept that they're following NIST, or in Texas, there's a Senate Bill 820 that Texas school districts have to implement a cybersecurity framework. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And there are companies like Cyanary that's out there that they provide a service, you know, these MSPs, managed service providers. Cyanary will go to the district. They will basically do everything for them, turnkey. Now, given someone has to be there to give them the information, but they put all that information together in the packet.
Right.
And that way you can submit it up to the cybersecurity insurer.
Okay. So there's a lot of proactive things that people can do, just like they can do certain things in their workplace to make it safer and possibly reduce their other premiums. That's good advice. That's good. So Matthew, now tell me a little bit about Impero and some of the stuff your company offers and where people can go for more information.
Absolutely. So we have several different products. One of them is Connect, which I shamelessly dropped earlier.
Well, but, you can drop it again here. It's fine.
Yeah, well, perfect. Perfect. So Connect, basically this solution, I think it's fantastic. We use it internally, if that tells you anything. But the product allows you to do not only remote connections that are proprietary connections, are very secure, but you can also control all your devices, get asset management from those devices, implement access controls. This goes back to that Dropbox link of being shareable to the whole world. Well, with Connect, we can secure what files are being shared mm-hmm. on different shared drives. So mm-hmm. that product has so many great great resources. But then we also have our classroom management solution. And then we have our well-being solution that really focuses on school districts. And then we also have our ContentKeeper web filter solution.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes back to clicking on those links. Because majority of the time, whenever like a link comes in through the email, if you hover over that link, it's going to show you the URL that you're going to go to. Mm-hmm. Typically on the bottom of the screen, it'll show you the URL. Well, with a solution like ContentKeeper, which we use internally, before you can get to that site, if it is a non-managed site to where you're not supposed to go there or we've never seen it before, it immediately gets blocked.
Mm-hmm. You don't even get to see it.
You don't even get to see it and you don't get exploited.
Yeah.
So we have that web filter solution that primarily focuses on school districts, but yet we still use it in the enterprise environment, such as ourselves, mm-hmm. because it's very valuable to us.
I can imagine it would be a great win for a hacker to be able to break into you guys, right? I mean, that would sort of be like a feather in their cap, right? I mean, that would kind of like be something that you got to be especially concerned about.
Absolutely. Well, take LastPass, how they were just exploited recently. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they were able to exploit LastPass, think about all the people that they are now able to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we have to make sure that we are secure ourselves first, mm-hmm. and then the products that we are offering, because we use our own products, they're going to be, in my opinion, more inherently secure.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, thank you, Matthew. It's great to meet you. Once again, what is the company's name and where can they go for more information?
Yes, great to meet you as well. Imperosoftware.com. That's a great website, I think. Again, I'm partial. I think it's very uniquely designed. It can show you all the right areas to go to on that site to get you the help you want. And there's a good spot to even inquire about what other services that I forgot to mention.
Well, thank you much. Best wishes and take care. Nice to meet you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Dead Pixel Society podcast. Read more great stories and sign up for the newsletter at www.thedeadpixelssociety.com.